It is very important for us to see that, that the hallmark of true Christianity is really humility. That's the hallmark. I mean, that's the bottom line thinking. And when somebody is not humble, what you have to do is back the bus up and try and figure out why. I mean, why is it that you would not be humble? What is it that makes you proud? The things that make you about yourself are really, or things that make you proud in that, in essence, are things that you just aren't getting right. I mean, if I could say, look, it, I'm really healthy, I'm really wealthy, I'm really powerful. You know what? God could say right now, guess what? Right now you're not. Boom. So how much in charge am I of any of that? You know, how much was I in charge of growing up in the family I grew up? How much am I in charge? When you start looking at it, it's like, man, I really can't take credit for a whole lot. And God goes, you're right. The thing you can take credit for, if you want, is to adjust your life where you love me and you spend time with me. And then I'll take credit for the great things that go on. Because I can make that happen. You can't make it happen. I want to keep looking at Jesus, because even though Jesus was the King of Kings, the ruler of the universe, there's nobody with more power, there's nobody with more authority, he lived a certain way. He lived humbly. Can you actually be the one that has the most money in the world, the most resources, the best of everything, the most power, and still live humbly? The answer would be, yeah, you can. Let's see how he did it. You know, what happened when Jesus was wronged? What happened? When they put him on a cross, what did he say? Father, forgive him. Man, I'm telling you, you crucify me and I had the power to kill you, you better step back. Because I'm, you know, that's my first thought is, oh, you think I don't have power? Watch this. He didn't do that. Do you know that people that truly have authority and power do not exercise it for themselves? They have no need to. They really don't have any need to push the buttons that way. None. There's a position here at camp. There's a board of directors, I can think, but there's also a board of trustees. The board of trustees in this ministry are the ones that are the most powerful of all the boards. They're the ones that actually can control what happens here. You probably don't hear of them much because they don't make many decisions. They don't make waves. Why? Because they're not people who care for power. They don't want the power. They know that they have a responsibility and they use it. But it's not like they're over there throwing their weight around, because they're not going to do that. See, people who actually have power, Jesus didn't need to throw his weight around. He didn't need to do that. He could, by the way. He could. There's no problem. He could. He did through the Bible for other people. He shut the lions for Daniel. He basically stopped Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego from burning. I mean, he did do things for them. But really for himself? Do you think that the people that crucified Jesus would have done it if they really knew he was God? What Jesus saw was the reality of it. They don't know who I am. Father, forgive them. Why? They don't know what they're doing. See, that's what he saw. I would just be mad. He saw something else. That's humility. Why is it humility that he saw something else? Well, because remember, what are we made to do? Love God, love man. That means we're always thinking of what's best for somebody else. So somebody's nailing me to the cross. You know what I'm thinking? What's best for them? You say, wait a minute, you're getting nailed to a cross. Well, I know, but I'm thinking about what's best for them while they nail me. That's what Jesus did. See that? Why? Because he didn't have a point to prove in it. I'm thinking about them. You know, when you're wrong, when somebody does something to you wrong, it says a little bit about whether you're spiritually arrogant or not, or just arrogant. A little different. I'm using words a little different. Spiritual arrogance and arrogance. Spiritual arrogance is more along the line of a religious arrogance kind of thing. Like, I'm really good. I do all these things. You don't do these. You're scum. You know, that kind of stuff. That's more spiritual arrogance. Where just arrogance is, it's all about me. So it's a little different, but equally as damaging. You know, when Christians are wronged, we actually begin to, you know, form support groups. And when we're wronged, we join the moan and groan club. We list it as a prayer request. What happens if you just take it? You know, when Jesus prayed, and that's what we were talking about last time, you know, the Jesus prayed in Luke 11. Let's just look at it. He said that the disciples came to him. They wanted to learn to pray. Obviously, Jesus knew how. And he said this. And he said to them, when you pray, say, Our Father, which art in heaven. This is obviously King James. Hallowed be thy name. You know why I do this? Because that's what I memorized in. And if I don't do it, I mess it up like completely. I hate it when I'm at a church. I know, deviant point, but I hate it when I'm at a church and they all say the Lord's Prayer together. I don't know which version they're using. And so I actually just stand there and go, watermelon, 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 because I'm not sure what version they use, and I could take off, and I never know when they're going to stop, because some stop early, some stop later, that kind of thing. So it's like, tell me the version before I go in so I know what to do with it. Otherwise, you're going to get watermelons. And he said unto them, when you pray, say, Our Father, which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, as in heaven, so in earth. Give us day by day our daily bread, and forgive us our sins, for we also forgive everyone that is indebted to us. And lead us not to temptation, but deliver us from evil. Where's the me in that passage? I mean, when you pray, what do you say? God, help me. Make me better. Me. Where's the me in here? Why is he so focused not on me? He's not focused on me. When he talks about me, he's talking about us. When he talks about God, your will, thy. Look at it, the words I've highlighted. Our, thy, us, we, us. Never me. What happens to us eventually is we would never say this, but we really believe that God is a sugar daddy in the sky who exists to make sure that we're happy and provides for us. And we start praying that way. Give me, give me, give me, give me, give me. It's all about me. It's all about my happiness. It's all about my life. It's all about my comfort. It's all about, I don't want this person sick. Why? Because it bothers me. What would happen if you prayed for them? See, that's a different story. Spiritual arrogance is when we start to just really believe this whole Christian experience that we have is really just about us. It isn't. It's about God. It's about you, but it's not about me. It's really important that we see that. I think the Lord's Prayer is something that whenever you read it, and I would suggest you read it often. Why? Because it's a reminder of that. Look how the King of Kings thinks. You know, and he looks at it and goes, you know, our Father, our, us, we have a Father, not just my Father. Is that important? To know it's our Father, not my Father? Well, you know it's your Father, but it's our Father. So that's just given. But not only that, there's not a perfect analogy here because God's not human, but in a human fatherhood world, I was talking to a guy like Dave Cooper, and they just adopted somebody, had four kids, so now they got five. You don't spend, you know, the same amount of time with all five children. Especially right now, there's a very needy one, and it's very interesting to see how he's struggling, trying, you know. And how do you get through that if you're a child? You say, well, he's our Father, he's not just mine. Now, the difference isn't why it doesn't work. It's because God can spend time with all of us all the time. But the idea is that he loves you and he loves me. He loves us both. And I get so myopic. You know what myopic on? We used to have a guy up here, and I'm not laughing. I'm just giggling because it was funny instances. And he had tunnel vision. You ever see someone with tunnel vision? They have no peripheral vision. They can't see. If they look at you, it's just like looking through a tunnel, and they just see you. So if they're walking, they'd walk right into a table. If he's looking at you, he'd walk right into it because he wouldn't see it out of the corner of his eye. And a lot of times, that's how we live our lives. We live our lives tunnel vision, right on us. I mean, we're looking just at our lives. And what happens is we're stumbling on everything that is around us. When if we open it up and we say, it's just not me, it's us, our Father. And I'm concerned for God's name, and I'm concerned that his kingdom come. In other words, there's a kingdom agenda going on here. I'm concerned that we're in the right kingdom. All of us, not just me, that we're in his kingdom. See, now, when you read the prayer and you have that in mind, you begin to see how somebody thinks that it's not arrogant or spiritually arrogant. They're actually living the way they should. Wouldn't you wonder, the disciples often wondered, what method do I need to use, God, you know, to heal people or do no method? You just have to understand things the way they really are. And the way they really are is that you and I are God's children. He loves us. And it's really about him, not us. And it's about you, not me. And the prayer does that for us. I love to compare Jesus' prayer with my prayers. You know, I have to admit that a lot of the times my prayers really are so self-centered. Even if someone asks you for a prayer request, what do you think first of? Your personal life? Things that affect you? What would happen if you really thought of other people all the time? It may not be the first request you have is about you. Now, and I'm not saying, you know, that you shouldn't be concerned about yourself and you shouldn't think about what you... That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying, even when a testimony is given, when somebody gives a testimony, you say, well, I got to tell you about my life. And sure, you do. But what about testifying to the goodness of God? And your life may be in there because you... What about talking about him? See, that's a little bit different. I would challenge you as you go to prayer, as you look at your prayer list, if you have a prayer list, as you talk to God, evaluate, what are you talking to him about? And you'll know a lot about whether you're dying to self or you're actually somebody who is understanding what God wants us to understand about life. In Malachi, it's kind of interesting. The book of Malachi is a very interesting book. When you look at it and you try and figure out what's in there, you first have to start with the word Malachi, which is very interesting because we don't know who this guy is. Oh, we think we do. We think it's a guy named Malachi. Which, what does the word Malachi mean? God's messenger. Well, that could be just about anybody. So we don't know. You know, the book of Malachi, which is interesting, has more references directly, if you would go per capita or whatever, it has more references, thus saith the Lord, right from the mouth of God than any other book in the Bible. That's interesting, too. The author is a messenger from God, and it's mostly right from the mouth of God. Now, people would say, well, it's Malachi the prophet, and, well, that could be, too. Could be a guy named Malachi, and that's what God had him do. I understand that. It's just weird how he's not really that well known, or we can't find him really anywhere. Not that the name wasn't around, but it's interesting. In the book of Malachi, it says, the Lord Almighty says, not only that, let's just think about that name, because they can't get off that thing, because there's no arrogance there. What if it is somebody that's well known, but he just didn't want to be known? He says, this is just the messenger of God who wrote this. It's kind of like what Elijah said to the people, remember? Today you'll know that God is God, and by the way, if you think of me, what are you going to think of? I'm a servant. That's all. I don't want you to think of, man, this guy's a big religious dude. No, I'm a servant. That's what you think of me. Well, the Lord Almighty says to the priests, a son honors his father, and a servant respects his master. Okay, what started out here is Malachi is just basically saying, like, there's just basic stuff you understand. A son honors a father, a servant respects his master. That's the way it goes. You know, and in their culture, that's the way it went. You are going to be a good son, you're going to listen to your parents, and you're a good servant, you listen to the master. I am your father and master. I'm both of those to you. But where is the honor and respect I deserve? You have despised my name. When you think about it, you look at it and you go, wait a minute. I know that you're father, and I know that you're master. How have I despised your name? Let me ask you this. You don't raise your hand on this. I'm just asking. Do you know that God is your father? Do you know that he is the master? So this would be said to you. You know those two things. Do you despise his name, though, then? And that's what's hard. How is it that I show honor and respect for a father and master? I mean, how do I do that? How do I live in order to show honor to the father and to the master? It's interesting when you get into the book. It says, but you ask, how have we ever despised your name? It's like, I'm glad you asked. I'll tell you. You have despised my name by offering defiled sacrifices on my altar. You have given me what's left over in your life. You know, I want to tell you, just from a relational viewpoint, Linda is not impressed when I give her my leftover time, my leftover energy, my leftover emotions. She's not overly impressed by that. She's not really impressed that I go and say, okay, Linda, you got, you know, 20 minutes, man. We got to connect. 20 minutes. I'm a good husband. You, me, 20 minutes. It's like, thanks. Is that what we do? That's kind of despising the whole marriage idea. It's kind of despising a relationship thing. Really? I get up and I say, God, all right, I'll give you 20 minutes. God, speak to me. If you don't get it done in 20 minutes, man, I gave it to you. You know why, God? Because I got a lot to do today, and you get my leftover time. You don't get my main time. You get my leftover time. That's all I got for you. I'm telling you, that's the basis of a really lousy relationship right there. But we're trained to do it. You know why? Because really in our brains, we're trained more to be arrogant. We're trained, this life, this earth, that the prince of the power of the air is Satan, this earth is really what I'm about. And I got things to do in this earth. And God could say to you like right now, really? I think you're gone from this earth, like boom, now. And now you're going to go, oh man, I should have spent more. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. You see, it's interesting that you and I, right now, probably, you're sitting here, I'm standing doing the same. I would say, I don't despise God's name. Because they were doing that. They were saying, not us, we're doing everything right. But here's what they were doing. They were giving leftovers. Just leftovers. It's amazing to me. You know how, you guys know I can go long when I teach. This weekend I did the men's thing, the first Friday night message, an hour and a half for those guys. And I only finished like half of it. I said, well, that's terrible. You know what? It is really hard to unpack something very seriously in 20 minutes. It's really hard. Look at the most churches you go to. It's 20 minutes, 30 minutes, maybe. Do you know that in that kind of time, if this is a real serious subject and we're really trying to unwrap something, you can't do anything in that time? You say, oh, yeah, God could do whatever he wants. I understand. The bottom line really is, what we've done as a culture is that we have taken, and we've said God's really important. And I would say to you that he's not in this culture. Why? Take a look at church. I'll just take the church I know, the one that I go to, okay? When I grew up, here's what happened. When I grew up in church, the pastor, actually my dad, would give us the theology book that you got was what we actually went through in high school. That was it. And we went through it. Wednesday nights, it was at least an hour and a half on that kind of stuff. And by the way, if you're going to be a youth leader, you have to go to Wednesday nights. And Wednesday nights was like an hour, hour and a half of teaching. And then you got together and prayed. Oh, and then, when you're in high school, you're expected to actually serve. You say, oh man, that doesn't work. I don't know. I started in 1970. Running a youth club, I'm still doing it. And not only that, Sunday mornings. Normally the message was an hour. And that was the message. Then you went to Sunday school for another hour. And then Sunday nights, yeah, that's when we really dug in. Another hour and a half. And you're expected to be there Sunday morning for two, Sunday night for one, Wednesday night for one. How many hours a week are you in the Word right now being taught besides the time you're in yourself? Then, when you're in high school, you're expected to be a leader. So now you're, you know, Thursday nights when the boys met. So now you're there and you're working with them and you're preparing messages for them. And you were expected, if you're going to do that, to be in the high school club as well, which was Monday night. Oh, you know what happened? A bunch of people got together and said, you know, families are never together, you know. So we're ruining families. So what they did is they trashed all that, made everything on one night. And the family's so much better today. That wasn't the problem. Today, if I look at our church, and by the way, this camp got started because you know what happens? There was people back then that said, the summer's kids are off, so we better have a place for them to go. We better have a place for our high school kids to work. We have to go get a place so that they can have a place to grow and develop. Today, if I look at our church, and I'm not beating up a church. I only go to one, so I can't talk about yours. We have no Sunday school in the summer. The place basically shuts down. We have to have the clubs on certain nights so that families don't have to be separated. We have no Sunday school, basically. We have some, but not Sunday school. They just have the kids leave during church and do that thing, but no more Sunday school. The messages are 20 minutes on Sunday. I'm even wondering, what do pastors do for a living, honestly? I mean, if you got to speak 20 minutes a week, what are you doing? I mean, you could do that by finding an internet message. So what are we doing now? And you might be saying, boy, you're really harsh on people. I'm not trying to be harsh. I'm trying to show you something. Because our culture would say, I don't despise God. Then why is it that everything else is more important than him? Why is it that we can't sit an hour anymore and listen to the word being taught? Why is it that it's okay to cancel stuff all summer so people can indulge in whatever they do and not have stuff for all the kids that are running around? Why is it okay to do that if we love God and we're not despising him? Oh, well, you're just legalistic. You think we did all those things? No, you could do all those things and still not love God. I understand that. But you see, that's the problem in the book of Malachi that's being talked about. You gave God junk. You gave him the leftovers. I can give you example after example. I still am amazed. People come to camp here, Christian moms, Christian dads come. You know, what do they want? I want the best for my kid. What about the kid who doesn't know Christ? Why don't we give him the best? Oh, no, you don't understand. It's about me, man. I understand. You would share it if money. Look, talk about money. We give God the leftover money. We make sure we're taken care of first. You see, what was happening here was something that all the way through the Bible, God said, look, if you really know I'm your father, if you really understand who I am, then you don't give me leftovers. You give me everything first. You understand that you trust me. You do the agenda I give you, and you'll be okay. You arrogant people somehow have twisted Christianity to make it about you when it's about God. See, that's the height of spiritual arrogance. And then we wrap it in our church or our Christianity. I don't know if you understand in finance. I don't understand finances. But they have what they call wrappers, or they used to years ago. If you have a candy bar, no matter what's in the candy bar, there's a wrapper. So it looks like whatever the wrapper says. And you used to be able to get a life insurance policy. They would call it a life insurance wrapper. But it's really a savings account. But because of the laws and the way it's written, you can have it this way and it's less taxes and eventually have a savings account because it was wrapped this way. And again, it's all legal. It's all right. That's why there's a 3,000-page tax code or whatever. I mean, it's all in there. But I always found it amusing. I said, why can't we just say what it is and not get taxes on it? Oh, you can't. You got to wrap it this way. Because this way it's acceptable. This way it isn't. And I'm too dumb to know. But it's the same thing. The emperor has no clothes. Yeah, well, you just don't get it. Okay, let's wrap it with this. But I know what it is. It's this. And you know, we've done that in the church. It's like, I want to be somehow self-centered. I want to somehow make it all about me. But I got to make it look like it's not. Oh, that's what they were doing. You have despised my name by offering defiled sacrifices on my altar. In other words, you had animals that were no good. You had animals that you didn't want, and you gave them to me, and somehow you paraded around saying, what a good boy am I. Look what I gave to God. When actually, I was helping you get rid of it. God was helping you get rid of that junk. You didn't want it yourself. You know, I could ask you these questions. You know what? The church has become somewhat unimportant because people can just about do anything other than go to church. This ministry here, and I'm not bitter about it or angry, but what I've learned is that Christians don't pay for this. They want a deal. I could tell people, like, it costs us $5,800 a day to keep the doors open. They go, yeah, can I get a discount? Sure you can. It's still going to cost $5,800 a day. Whether you get a discount or not, it doesn't really matter. That's what it's going to cost. Yeah, well, can I have a discount? Why? Because this has to do with God and Christianity. I don't want to pay for that. Oh, I'll pay for the Brewers game, no problem. Just not that. I'll pay for college, no problem. I just want to pay for my Christianity. I'm sitting there going, well, you don't really pay for Christianity anyway. But that doesn't mean we don't pay for electricity or stuff. We still put gas in like the plow. And we have to pay for those things. Yeah, but you understand. It's really, Christianity is supposed to be about me. Not me about Christianity. Oh, yeah, I guess I don't get that. I don't even understand the words. All I know is that if I'm really arrogant, what happens is everything gets put through the filter of me, what I want, how I want to live, what's best for me. I don't think of God, and I really don't think of others, but if I do, I wrap it in this Christianese kind of thing so that everyone thinks I'm thinking of God and others. And then I feel pretty good about me, actually, until somebody screams, the emperor doesn't have any clothes. Then you ask, how have we defiled your sacrifices? I love the book of Malachi because in this whole system, what's happening is God just like doing the same. This would be me. I would be in this crowd because it's like, what do you mean I defile? I give you, I keep asking the questions. And so the prophet or whoever is saying, you ask, how have we defiled sacrifices? And the answer is, you've defiled them by saying the altar of the Lord deserves no respect. When you get blind animals as sacrifices, isn't that wrong? And isn't it wrong to offer to the animals that are crippled and diseased? Try giving gifts like that to your governor. See how pleased he is, says the Lord Almighty. Boy, there's a very powerful phrase because that wasn't said by human. God says, do you really think what you give me shows respect for me? Try giving it to the President of the United States and see what he says. Try giving it to somebody in your world and see what they say. So I got this old mangled lamb that's got cancer. God, I offer you this. Go give it to your governor so he can eat it. Again, very seldom in life has somebody come to this ministry and said, I want to give you something brand new. Almost all the time, they give us junk. Almost all the time, they give us stuff that doesn't, that has outlived the usefulness that they have for it. And they walk away thinking, what a good boy am I. And I think, no kidding. That is not what's taught in the Bible. You know what? I think that we should be turning away gifts by now, this place. I think the people that went through here should be saying, you got vans that have 250,000 miles on them? I'm going to buy a new one, like now. And then the next day I come and say, I'm going to buy a new one. No, really, we've got enough vans. Stop. See, I'd love to do what they did at the temple. I eventually say, just stop giving, would you please? I mean, we got too much. Just stop, go away. Why? Oh, you know what? I don't think I'll ever see that because Americans don't do that. We give our junk away. Seriously, the stories could drive you crazy. And they're all true. The guy once brought a pickup truck, wanted to give it to us. Another guy who was in business saw the pickup truck and he had his pickup truck. And he honestly said, we should just trade. Why? That one's too good for you. What? You know what? I could take it, use it in my business for a while, just really use it up, and then give it back. Why, thanks. I think. I know what he was saying. You know what's going to happen? Some of you are going to learn to drive a pickup truck, a four-speed or something up here or whatever, and you're going to back into a tree. And that's what they were saying. It's like, you know, you need junk up here so people can just wreck it. But I know that if you have junk, people wreck junk. I don't know how many times in life someone has just said to me, you know, that's just probably too good for what you guys do. And I cannot figure out that thinking. You know, it's not that I want all brand new great stuff. I don't. Think of it this way. There's people here. I grew up very rich, actually. Poor, but rich. Because I was here. And there's a bunch of stuff here that, like, rich people have that I would never have had. Like, we have ski boats and horses. And, I mean, I'd never own that. But sometimes a friend might invite me to their cottage. You know, and they got this screaming $80,000 boat. And we have Lauren shuffling back and forth, trying to keep these junks running all summer. And we just teach 8-year-olds for nothing how to ski. You know, junk boats are good enough. You know, I can't figure out how a guy that has resources would look and say, for my family of four, I'm going to have an $80,000 boat. And for a ministry, we'll give you, do you mind when it wears out and it's worth like $3,000? You can have it. And by the way, you know why we have three boats instead of just one? Because they're so old that they break down. And little children, when they like to ski, they get their heart all set on it. And when it doesn't work, they're very sad. And that's not what we're about. So let's get another junk boat so we can back up the other junk boat. And you know what? What's really interesting when you look at that is, oh, you're just on a soapbox here. Am I or am I telling you the truth about how we operate as a Christian nation? Now, sometimes we get food at a place called Second Harvest, and it's not bad. I don't know what it is now. It used to be like 10 cents a pound or 15. I don't know what it is. But and you know what's interesting? It's not bad. Sometimes they get really good food there, but a lot of times what they have is the food that's outdated because the stores don't have anything to do with it. So instead of just, you know, let's give it and get a tax rep. And then they, what a good store am I? You know, I gave away a bunch of stuff that we couldn't sell. And then they write it in the paper about how good they've been and generous to the world. Now, am I thankful for that? You know, honestly, I've eaten a lot of that Second Harvest food. I'm fine and I'm thankful we got it. But doesn't that expose the problem? It's really beyond me sometimes why Christians will think somehow that they can give only what is used up and think that God is somehow pleased. And when we do that, I believe that we've despised God's name. There was a missionary friend of mine years ago. He came back from the mission field and he went, and there was a guy that was a very rich guy he was staying with. And he went up to his house and the very rich guy pointed to a car and said, you know what, I bought you this car, so while you're in the States, you know, you can use this car free of charge. And my friend looked at him and said, you drive it. Because right next to it was a brand new Lexus. And this was a piece of junk. And he had the courage to just look at him and say, you drive it. The guy got the message around and bought him a new car. Now, it's very interesting how somebody thinks they're generous. Think about this. There's a guy serving the Lord on the mission field. His life is in danger. He's fighting parasites. He's constantly in trouble. He comes back, and the Christian community says, here's a piece of junk you can use. We're so proud of you. And because they are so poor, they don't even have the courage to say, I don't want that. I remember this summer, I had a couple friends, my one cousin who's translating the Bible, another missionary, Dave, who's translating the Bible in Congo. And they went to Canada with me, and I was able to just write a couple emails. We got them paid for completely, the whole works. They were flabbergasted that we paid for them. The thing that broke my heart was when they came up here. Big family comes up in this van that looks like it should have been in the junk heap a long time ago. The whole big family, one cell phone. And it wasn't a smartphone. I have the money for that stuff. Yeah. He's sacrificing his life to get the Bible to the Congo. When he comes back here, we treat him like what? Now, look, you might be saying, Dave, you're a real good salesperson. You're trying to get a lot of money for camp. The only reason I can talk about camp is because I've been here long enough to see it. You can fill in the blank with other places. You can go to places that have a lot of money because what they do is they're really about the money and they consume it. If you can make, I was in a fundraising seminar once where I said, it's easy to raise funds. Just make it about the person giving the money. Oh, really? That's all you got to do? Yeah. When you make it about them, they give you money. No kidding. So like if they get nothing out of it, they don't want to give you money? No. I thought, how unchristian. Really? I mean, think about it for a minute. This is what I was told at a Christian fundraising for ministry seminar. When they walk in the door, You got to think, okay, do they have grandchildren? This, that? I got to tell them somehow, if they give here, it'll benefit their family, them, and then they're really in, and they'll do it. What about not letting your left hand know what your right hand does? What about having God be the one that directs it? What about having the Spirit actually convict you about something? Where's all that? Oh, we don't do it that way. Well, then we might as well be the YMCA, really. Or something else that just goes out there and says we need money for whatever. We're not that. What we do is important work of the King. And here's what I've learned. Whether we have a lot or whether we have nothing, I'm okay. I've dealt with a lot of people who dropped junk off, and I said, thank you. Yeah, you know, that old van is certainly better than the other old van we had. So I guess we just went up a notch. You ask, how have you defiled sacrifice? You defile them by saying the altar deserves no respect. You know, what I'm asking is, where's the community? When I look at the book of Malachi, here's what I see. I would label it different than other people. I'd label it as the worthless community. In other words, there are people who go to church right now, and I would label your church a worthless community. Why? Because they let this stuff go on. They shouldn't let this stuff go on. Where are the people that know what's going on here stand up saying, hey, this isn't how we do it? Why aren't they there? Because it's a worthless community, and they've all done the same thing for so long, the same way, that now this is how they do it. Oh, there's a lot of other places in the Bible that talk about this too. The time, remember when David took the ark and he didn't do it right? Supposed to be on a cart. He didn't, or supposed to be carried by, and put on a cart. Supposed to be carried by the Levite. Well, where were the people that said, don't do it that way, King? Worthless community. Cost of life. Worthless community. Nobody's saying anything. See, why are they worthless? Because they're arrogant. They're all about themselves. They've got a system in place that works for them. One of the things I hate to hear from somebody when they give me a gift is, I'd love to give you more, but is there any way that you can make it so it's tax deductible? Now look, I am not against tax deductions. In fact, the least money you give the government, I'm for. But please don't make that your motive. I will work hard if somebody gives us a gift to give them every benefit from the taxes, believe me. But please don't make that your motive. Somebody asked me once if they took away the tax incentives for giving to nonprofits, if we'd be in trouble. And I said, I don't think so. Right? Well, first of all, God is the one in charge of that, not people. And secondly, I really don't think, see, we don't have a whole bunch of sugar daddies in this place. I don't know people with that kind of money. I don't think that most of the people that give it to us would notice that they didn't get a tax deductible receipt. So it probably wouldn't affect us that much. I'm not against tax deductible receipts. I'm really not. I am against it being a motive for anything. Because then I think you start to build something up. You know how hard it is to tell somebody the resources, the stuff I'm telling you? They're not used to hearing this. But the people in Malachi's, they weren't used to hearing it either. Because they had no clue that they were doing something wrong. None. When they were. One of the greatest demonstrations of arrogance is living as if God needed us. We missed the whole point of sacrifice. You know, when I live as if God needs me, okay, you know. Let me ask you this. When the Bible says that we give to people, do we give out of necessity? Is that what it says to do? No. Why don't we just give because of need? Why don't we do that? Because you can never meet the need. I don't care how much money you have right now, you cannot meet the needs of the world. You can't. So you don't give because of need. And not only that, there's need everywhere. I could have each of you stand up and you could probably tell me a personal need, you can tell me a family need, you can tell me a world need. There's needs like nonstop. Not only that, there's a lot of videos, whatever that means, produced that show you, you know, starving children here. There's needs like all over the world. There's needs. So where are you going to give? Not only that, if you give because of need, you know what happens? You end up being one who can be influenced. by a sad story, by a, you can't. So how do you give? Well, it says don't give out of need and don't give grudgingly either. In other words, don't give saying, oh man, I wish I... Those are two little, by the way, those are two like markers in your life to tell you whether you're arrogant or not. Because if you give because you're going to meet the need, what you're saying is, I can meet the need of this. And if you give and you're grudging, well, you do it, you're grudgingly, you give and you go, wish I didn't have to do this. Why? You know what you're saying? I am so important that if I don't do this, it's not going to happen. Lie. Just keep the money in your pocket. See what happens. I bet you God can meet the need without you. See, when your money becomes something, when your giving becomes something, where you start saying, I am needed, oh man, you're in trouble, because that is a lie from the pit of hell. You are not needed for anything. But the opposite is true too. When you don't give out of necessity, and you give joyfully, that's a good thing. In other words, God puts something on your heart. I love it when I go home once in a while, and Linda will say to me something like, I remember this one was a little bit of a shocker, but I came home one day and she said, you know this guy? I said, yeah. She said, I've been thinking about it. Let's pay off his college bill. I thought, where'd that come from? Really? No kidding? You want to pay his college? Go ahead. Where'd it come from, though? No one expressed a need. Nobody was saying, we need you to do this. Praying and thinking and just wanting to encourage somebody. That's where it came from, honestly. Because as I asked her, so what do you want to do that for? I just think that they just need some encouragement. And it was almost giddy. Let's help them. Let's do that. Let's just help this person. I've seen Linda do that. Like, here's a family that, you know, not having Christmas or whatever, and all of a sudden she's there, man. She's writing a check. She's trying to figure out how to get them gifts. And not because they asked. Not because they need. She just thought, what fun would this be? That's giving kind of giddy. I mean, you're, whew, this is cool. I get to give. You know what I found? Those who love God, they're generous. They're generous. They're not always trying to figure out an angle. They're just generous. It's not even because of a need, even. You know, at my age, I got a lot of old guy friends that have money. And not tons of money, just enough to live. And a lot of times they'll come and say, do you have any needs? And the answer is always, no, I don't have any needs. And then I say, oh, come on. No, I really don't, honestly. I don't have a need in the world. Can't we take care of something for you? I really don't have a need, honestly. Everything I need has been provided for. So if you wanted to give me like a lot of money right now for a need, I wouldn't even know what to do with it. Say, wait, you're unusual. Am I, or have we missed something? One of the greatest demonstrations of arrogance is living as God needs us. I really don't need somebody to meet the needs of sober trans. God will do that. If he has to take it out of the mouth of a bass that I catch, he can do that. And you know what? If you get in on it, I hope you do it as a giddy person, totally excited about what you can do with your resources. I often tell people who give, they say, what's the attitude for giving? It's like, give it to God and let it go. You know, if they use it wrong? I said, give it to God. Well, you know what's going to happen if you give it to God and they use it wrong? It's not your business, but it stinks to be them at this point. So you gave it to God. You didn't give it to them. The truth is, someone comes to me and says, you know what, you've been here all these years. And I say, you know what, you better give that money to God because I could fall over dead like now. And then I'm not overseeing anything anymore. So you better give it to God. See, it's arrogant to believe we're needed. I'm not even needed to run it. Nobody's needed. The special part. Wanted. God wants me. So I get to use my resources, and I get to use my time, and I get to use my energy in a way that actually matters. Whoa, that's fun. Psalm 50, 7 to 9. Hear, O my people, and I will speak. O Israel, I will testify against you. I am God, your God. I do not rebuke you for your sacrifices or your burnt offerings, which are ever before me. I have no need of a bull from your stall or goats from your pens. God's kind of interesting here. Look, somehow you have thought, I need your goat. No, I don't. I'm God. Oh, so I'm not going to give it to you then, God. I'll find someone who needs it. God would say, you're missing the point. You still need to give it. But don't you give it as if I need it. Do you think that when I give God my money that he needs it? No. Remember Jesus? Remember when they gave, and Jesus was there, and there was the rich guy who gave lots, and there was the widow that gave him money? Don't you find it interesting that Jesus said, oh, she gave a lot more than you, pal. Wait a minute, no way. I gave like a gazillion dollars. She gave him one little piece. And God goes, but you don't get it, do you? You know what she did? She gave everything that she had to live on. You know what kind of position she's in now? She has to trust me. You know what kind of position you think you're in? You don't have to trust me. You gave out of your overflow. She gave, you didn't. Wow. And I forget, there was a guy that came up here once and he gave us something, and it was an older truck. However, this older truck was, yeah, I'm not against used trucks. It was a good truck. It was a used good truck. And I said, oh man, thanks. And I said, you don't understand how much this is going to help, this truck. And he stopped me because it was like I was young in ministry and I was just trying to be thankful. He said, oh, be quiet. I said, what do you mean? I didn't give you anything. This truck is something I'm getting rid of. Don't give me a receipt. Don't give me a thanks. You're like my garbage pile. Just don't thank me for it. Until it cost me something, he said, I haven't given you a gift. This didn't cost me anything. Oh. I learned as a young man. That's right. That's not a gift. But it didn't cost you anything. You're just getting rid of something. It's like if you came over, it's like I have this abundance of sweatshirts, and if I felt like I was going to be real nice to you and I gave you a sweatshirt, you go, you're so generous. What are we going? Do you want like 10 more? He's not being generous. He doesn't even wear them. Well, no, I'm not generous when I give you something I don't need. Think of it, how many churches, how many people are in our churches that think today that when they give an offering or they help a mission or they... But they're only giving away things that they don't need. What does that say? I have no need for your bull from your stall or your goats from your pens. You know, understand something. When you give something to God, please understand that you're not giving it to him so his work can be done and without you it won't be done. Otherwise you start slipping into the wrong mind frame. I can imagine this recording is going to go over real well for us down the road. It's a privilege to be a part of God's team. It is never a sacrifice to give God or his work. It is a privilege, for God can do his work without me. This is a statement I just wrote once in a journal of mine because I was all messed up, I think. I was starting to think that God needed Dave Wager to get his work done, that he needed me to lead here, that he needed my thoughts and my ideas. And you know what? The more I thought I was needed, the more I got crushed. Remember, I told you before that if you take on God's responsibilities, you're not meant to carry those and it'll crush you. I am not meant to be needed. I am meant to be wanted. And when I start acting needed, I get crushed. God's the only one that's needed. That's his responsibility, not mine. And when I start believing that I'm needed, whoa, look out. Here's what I found since, and you will find that this is true, and it's kind of a weirdness of mine. I think it is so much fun that God chose me to do what I do. It is a privilege to do it. Now, when you think it's a privilege to do what you do, how do you act? You're not moaning and groaning all the time about the work, and you're not... Why? It's a privilege. You mean God would want me to stand up to Nebuchadnezzar and not bow? Woo-hoo. That's cool. I get to tell him I'm praying anyway? Throw me to the lions? Yeah. Cool, man. I have the privilege of representing the king. Whoa, that's a different way to look at it. You see, I think what's happened in the church somehow is as we have exercised our spiritual arrogance, as we have become those who God needs, as we begin to make things about us, we have lost the joy of our Christianity. We have lost the idea of privilege. Instead, we have this burden all the time. I tell you, some of you have been to Haiti. I know there's ministries in Haiti that you've been in. You want to take on that country and make sure it's all it needs of it? Beat your head on a rock first. It'll feel better. There's no way. Does that mean you don't go to Haiti and serve? No, that's not what I said. I just said, you're not going to meet the needs. Who can meet the needs? God actually can. Oh, he might even use you. You might get the privilege of being used by some way, some shape, some form. I don't know. It's interesting. There was a guy here this last weekend that I've been speaking to a men's group that was here about 20 years. And there was a guy that was here that led it 20 years ago. And he came and said, Do you remember when we started coming up and having you teach? He said, sorry, I really don't. He goes, I met you at an Awana conference and you were doing the teaching there. And we talked, and we came up here and have been coming ever since. Now, I want to tell you something. The fruit of the relationship with that group of men has been tremendous. I've seen growth. I've seen changes. I've seen just tremendous stuff. But here's what I remember about those Awana conferences. I had to go to them at a time where we didn't have any money. They didn't pay anything. I was actually paying myself so I could go speak. And I kept wondering how wise that was. I thought, shouldn't they at least pay for my gas or something? And yet, God put these principles on my heart saying, Dave, is this about you? No. Is it a privilege to serve me? Yes. But see, my humanness would kick in like Romans 7. But I don't want to do it because and now I look back. This weekend, God just convicted me. He keeps teaching. It's like, hey, Dave, remember back then when you thought that was a waste of time? Oh, yeah. Take a look at this room of 100 men that you have been able to teach. You still think it was a waste of time? I was setting something up. Sorry, God. I did complain a little bit back then, quite a bit. You see, I forgot somehow that it was a privilege to serve you. And I thought it was my responsibility to do that. I thought I had to do it, or who else would? And I lost the idea of privilege. I get to go to do the No Regrets retreat again this year, and going down to Sheboygan. And honestly, I'm thrilled that they asked me again. Right? Because it's a privilege. There's no more obligation stuff. I'm not doing it because if I don't do it, it's not going to happen. I know that. I don't have to show up there tomorrow. No regrets will go on. Great things will happen. God will work. But for some reason, I get to go and be a part of it. That's very cool. All right, let's take 5 minutes. Come on back.